Welcome to the Deep Dive. We often see public figures through these, well, carefully crafted images, don't we? But what happens when their art, their comedy in this case, becomes a really raw, honest reflection of their deepest struggles and triumphs?
Yeah, it changes everything.
Today, we're diving into the fascinating, sometimes surprising, and always evolving world of a comedian who consistently redefined observational humor.
Right.
Only to later share his most personal journey with the world. You might know him from his sharp suits, that even sharper wit on Saturday Night Live, maybe his beloved stand-up specials.
Absolutely. Our deep dive today is into the life and really the multifaceted career of John Mulaney, you know, the American stand-up comedian, actor, writer, producer. And our mission really is to extract the most important nuggets of knowledge, the insights from all the material out there. We want to connect the dots between his early life, that unique comedic style, his career milestones, and, well, the truly profound impact of his personal story on his art.
Yeah, so you listening will gain not just facts, but hopefully a comprehensive understanding of what makes Mulaney such a singular, such an enduring voice in comedy.
Right, offering those aha moments about his craft and maybe the broader landscape of modern entertainment, too.
You know, it's compelling because Mulaney's story, it really starts in a very specific place, doesn't it? Right in the heart of the Midwest. With a family background that might surprise some people who only know that comedic persona. He was born John Edmund Mulaney, August 26, 1982, in Chicago, Illinois.
Third of five kids, Irish Catholic heritage.
And his parents, Ellen Mulaney and Charles Chip Mulaney Jr., they're both highly accomplished lawyers. His mother, a law professor at Northwestern University Pritzker School of Law.
Right. And his father, a partner at a major firm, Skadden Arps. So a very sort of high-achieving environment.
Totally. What do you think that environment, you know, steeped in logic and argument, what did that lend to his early development and maybe eventually his comedic voice?
Oh, that's a fantastic question because it immediately sets him apart, doesn't it? From maybe other comedians whose origins are more about, say, rebellion or observing from the fringes.
Yeah.
Mulaney's foundation seems to be an intellectual precision, a world where arguments are built meticulously, where language is used with real care. Think about his stand-up. He often presents these scenarios less like simple jokes and more like carefully built cases to the audience, right? Dissecting social absurdities with almost like legalistic precision.
That's a great way to put it. Like a closing argument for absurdity.
Exactly. That parental influence, I think, it instilled a certain meticulousness, maybe even a gravitas in his approach. Even when he's talking about, you know, a horse in a hospital, he's presenting a well-reasoned argument for why it's absurd.
And that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
He almost cross-examines reality in his jokes, doesn't he?
He does.
And the family connections, they don't stop there. His maternal great-grandparents included George J. Bates, a Republican mayor of Salem, Massachusetts, and a U.S. congressman.
Right. And his maternal great-uncle, William H. Bates, also served as a U.S. congressman. So it's not just lawyers. It's a family with this clear tradition of public service, public engagement.
How might that thread of public life, even, you know, maybe from a distance, have woven into his own journey into the public eye?
Well, it definitely highlights a background of, let's say, high intellectualism and public awareness around him from a young age. And while Mulaney's comedy isn't always overtly political, not in the way some comics are, there's a certain maybe public-facing decorum, a sense of responsibility to his craft that you could maybe trace back to this lineage.
Interesting.
He's not just, you know, firing off jokes. He's presenting a carefully curated, often insightful view of the world, kind of like a public servant might articulate a policy, maybe.
Yeah, I could see that.
And speaking of interwoven circles, there's that incredible anecdote about his maternal grandmother, Carolyn Stanton.
Oh, yeah.
She actually performed in a hospital benefit show alongside Hillary Myers, who is, of course,
Seth Meyers' mother.
Exactly. Mulaney's future SNL colleague. And the show was directed by a then 19-year-old Tommy Toon.
No way. That's wild. It's like the creative universe is already kind of nudging things together.
Yeah.
Subtle foreshadowing.
It really feels like it, doesn't it? And his parents also went to Georgetown University and Yale Law School at the same time as future President Bill Clinton.
Wow.
Whom Mulaney actually met in 1992.
These aren't just random facts. They paint this picture of an upbringing steeped in intellectual curiosity, influential circles. It's quite a foundation.
Absolutely. It speaks to an environment that really valued education, critical thinking, engagement with the wider world. And within that, his early life also had this profound personal and spiritual dimension.
Right, he was an altar boy.
Yes, and he chose Martin as his confirmation name. He did that to honor his late brother, Peter Martin, who sadly died at birth when Mulaney was four.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's incredibly poignant.
It is, and that early exposure to structure, to ritual, combined with such a personal connection to a name, mm-hmm. it's almost like a foundational template for the meticulous, almost formal delivery we see in his stand-up, isn't it?
That's a sharp observation. He brings a kind of, architectural precision to his jokes, almost like a priest delivering a sermon, but, with punchlines instead of scripture.
Right.
That blend of high-low, sacred, profane.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could absolutely stem from those early experiences. It gives his observational humor this unique kind of gravitas. It's not just funny. It often feels very considered.
Mm-hmm.
And his comedic journey, it has a very specific origin point, too. At just 5 years old, Mulaney decided he wanted to go into show business after watching Ricky Ricardo on I Love Lucy.
Incredible.
He's an altar boy, parents are lawyers, then he sees Ricky Ricardo, and boom, show business. It's almost comically dramatic, isn't it?
It really is.
But seriously, what does that early, almost instantaneous conviction tell us about the foundational drive in Mulaney?
It's truly a lightning bolt moment, isn't it? And it suggests this really clear, almost preordained ambition. For many people, show business is this kind of meandering path. But for Mulaney, it was like a direct North Star from age five.
Yeah.
He was drawn to Ricky Ricardo's charisma, his command of the stage, the way he held an audience. That unwavering focus probably fed into his meticulousness later on. He knew exactly what he was building towards, even if he didn't know the exact blueprint yet.
Right.
He wasn't just dreaming, he was actively pursuing it. At age seven, he was already performing in the Rugrats, which was a Chicago-based children's sketch group.
Wow, seven.
Yeah. This wasn't just a casual interest. It was practical, hands-on experience and performance from a really young age. He was embracing the craft with impressive early commitment.
That's incredible foresight for a child.
Yeah.
And speaking of early opportunities, there's that fascinating what-if moment. He had the chance to audition for Kevin in Home Alone.
Oh, yeah.
But his parents declined. Imagine. How might his entire career trajectory have shifted if he'd landed an iconic child star role like that?
Oh, man. It's a classic Hollywood sliding doors scenario, right? If he had done Home Alone, who knows? Maybe he gets typecast. Maybe early fame puts him off comedy entirely.
Sure.
Instead, his parents' decision, maybe unwittingly, kept him on this path of self-directed comedic education stage experience, which I believe was crucial for developing his unique voice authentically, away from the glare of early mainstream stardom.
Allowed him to develop on his own terms.
Exactly. And his inclination toward performance continued anyway. In junior high at St. Clement's School, instead of writing traditional reports, he and his best friend, John O'Brien, they'd perform what they had learned as skits.
That's brilliant.
It really underscores this early, consistent preference for performance over, say, traditional academic presentation. It shows that innate pull towards the stage.
That's a clear signal of where his talents really lay. And by 14, he was already engaging with theater, playing Wally Webb in a production of Our Town.
Right. So this steady progression from childhood sketches to theater, it shows consistent development of his performance skills, building that foundation.
But, what I find truly compelling, maybe the most compelling part of this early period, is how Mulaney seemed to engineer his comedic voice from such a young age.
Mm-hmm.
That intense, self-directed study of comedy history. It feels like he built his own comedic operating system. He frequented the Museum of Broadcast Communications, studying archived episodes of shows like I Love Lucy, The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson. How crucial was that deep immersion for the polished style we recognize today?
Oh, that deep dive into comedy history is absolutely crucial. And it's something you don't hear about from every contemporary comedian,
Right.
He wasn't just watching, he was studying the masters. This explains so much about his polished, almost classic style. The structure, the pacing, the careful word choice.
Yeah.
He absorbed the craft of Carson's monologues, the theatricality of Lucille Ball, the timeless observations of early stand-ups. He didn't just want to be funny. He wanted to understand why things were funny and how to construct humor with lasting impact.
Like a comedy scholar.
Pretty much. It gave him this appreciation for the mechanics of a joke, the architecture of a set. It probably allowed him to bypass a lot of the trial and error stages other comedians go through.
That makes perfect sense. He brought an academic rigor to his passion. After graduating from St. Ignatius College Prep in 2000, he followed his parents to Georgetown University, majored in English, minored in theology.
Right. And that combination, literature and philosophy, you could see that directly feeding into his analytical, observant, and often kind of moralistic comedic voice, right? Giving it a unique depth beyond just surface level humor.
Absolutely. It adds that layer of intellectual rigor, that almost philosophical inquiry to his jokes. He's often exploring the absurdities of human behavior, societal norms, which is deeply rooted in both literature and philosophical thought.
And Georgetown was pivotal for another reason, too. He joined the university's improv group, where he met future collaborators Nick Kroll and Mike Birbiglia.
Wow, so that's where those connections started.
Yeah. These weren't just college friendships. They proved to be absolutely pivotal for his career, laying the groundwork for a network that would become incredibly influential later on.
That collaborative spirit clearly started early. And a crucial step in his development was overcoming stage fright.
Mm-hmm.
He did that by joining Birbiglia on his stand-up tour.
Right. For an aspiring comedian, that kind of hands-on experience facing live audiences night after night, that's truly transformative, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It forces you to hone your delivery, your presence, in a way nothing else can.
It really highlights how deeply committed he was to comedy, pushing through that common fear to pursue his calling. So if we think about all these formative experiences, the family background, early ambition, self-directed study, academics, early collaborations, it all kind of culminates in his unique comedic influences. Mulaney is a self-professed, longtime collector of stand-up albums. He emphasizes the profound importance of audio comedy in his development. He grew up, as he puts it, sitting on the floor with his Discman, listening to albums.
That image alone says so much about his dedication, just absorbing it.
Exactly. And this detail is critical for understanding his foundational style.
And the list of albums he cited, it's like a masterclass in comedy history itself. He named Chris Rock's Bring the Pain and Bigger and Blacker.
Classics.
Woody Allen's Comedian, Nichols and Mays, Mike Nichols and Elaine May Examine Doctors, and Albert Brooks' Comedy Minus One. This isn't just a list. It's like a curriculum in comedy, right?
Right.
Showing his appreciation for narrative, character, sharp observation across generations.
It's an incredibly diverse and sophisticated palette.
Yeah.
You've got Chris Rock's raw, energetic social commentary, Woody Allen's neurotic observational storytelling, Nichols and May's sharp improvisational sketch brilliance, and Albert Brooks' meta comedy that plays with the form itself.
Mm.
This range suggests Mulaney wasn't just confined to one style, but drew from this wide spectrum to forge his own. He also mentioned listening to Jerry Seinfeld, Dave Chappelle, George Carlin, Richard Pryor, Conan O'Brien, Bob Newhart.
A true pantheon of greats, covering styles from observational to dark, quick wit to masterful storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And for someone so particular, his top four comedy albums, they really distill his core influences. What's fascinating here is his top four, Chris Rock's Bring the Pain.
Yeah.
Mitch Hedberg's uniquely surreal one-liner genius in strategic grill locations.
So good.
Eddie Izzard's theatrical historical storytelling in Dress to Kill.
Brilliant.
And David Till's dark rapid-fire observations in Skanks for the Memories. This detailed list offers incredible insight into the diverse masters who shaped his comedic sensibilities. It shows a preference for smart, often rapid-fire, intricately structured humor, but also a willingness to embrace the unconventional.
You've hit on something important there. It's not just about the humor itself, it's the craft of it. Each of those comedians, despite their vastly different styles, they're masters of structure and delivery.
Right.
Hedberg, with his perfectly formed non sequiturs, Izzard, with his epic storytelling, Attell, with his dense joke writing, Rock, with his commanding stage presence. Mulaney absorbed elements from all of them, I think, to create his own distinct, highly polished, yet deceptively complex style.
Okay, let's fast forward a bit. His breakthrough in New York City. After graduating Georgetown in 2004, he makes the big move, comedy ambitions firmly in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And he started out, maybe surprisingly, as an office assistant at Comedy Central.
Yeah, that's a common, pretty humble entry point for a lot of people in the industry, right? Starting at the bottom.
Definitely.
But even then, his collaborative spirit, his innate talent, they were evident. He pitched I Love the 30s, a parody of I Love the 80s, which he developed with Nick Kroll.
Kroll again.
Yep. This early collaboration clearly foreshadowed so many successful partnerships to come. It shows his ability to generate creative ideas even when he was, you know, technically in an administrative role.
And here's a real turning point that speaks to his conviction. He was working at Comedy Central when Dave Chappelle abruptly left the network.
Right, a huge moment for Comedy Central.
And Mulaney seized the moment, quit his job, he felt it was a hindrance to being a comedian, and started working freelance. That was a bold, almost audacious move, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. To leave a stable job to chase stand-up full-time. But it totally paid off. It freed him up to pursue his passion fully.
Yeah, it speaks volumes about his conviction, his unwavering commitment to his true calling. His big break came after performing on Late Night with Conan O'Brien.
Huge platform.
Which then led to an audition for Saturday Night Live in August 2008. He went in with what he described as low expectations, performing stand-up, but with these charactery bits in them, rather than just, say, traditional impressions.
And that unique, character-driven approach, it worked. It landed him a coveted spot on the writing team.
And what a spot it was. He stayed for four seasons, 2008 to 2013, becoming this really crucial part of the show's creative engine during a pretty vibrant period.
Mm-hmm.
He became known for writing monologues for hosts, which requires a very specific, polished, comedic voice.
Yeah, tricky skill.
And occasionally even appeared on Weekend Update, showing his versatility beyond just writing.
But his most enduring contribution as a writer, you'd have to say, undeniably, was co-creating the iconic recurring character Stefan with Bill Hader.
Oh, absolutely legendary.
That dynamic between Mulaney's meticulous, bizarre descriptions of New York's hottest clubs.
This place has everything.
Exactly. And Hader's performance became legendary, often leading to Hader breaking character on live television.
Which fans adored.
Totally. It showcased their brilliant chemistry, proved the material was genuinely side-splitting.
And his talent as a writer, it didn't go unnoticed, right? He was nominated for the Primetime Emmy Award for Outstanding Writing for a variety series with the SNL writing staff from 2009 to 2012. That's major recognition within the industry.
Yeah, consistently nominated. Mm. And he secured an individual win, too, highlighting his specific contributions. He won a Primetime Emmy for Outstanding Original Music and Lyrics at the 2011 Emmys.
For what?
For the Justin Timberlake monologue. An award he shared with Timberlake, Seth Meyers, and Catrice Barnes.
Ah, okay, so that highlights his talent for crafting memorable musical comedy within a sketch format, a skill he'd definitely revisit later in his career.
Absolutely. And his connection to SNL, it really endured beyond his writing tenure in a truly remarkable way.
Yeah, he's hosted SNL six times since leaving, became only the fourth SNL writer to ever host.
And, even more impressively, joined the prestigious Five Timers Club in 2022.
For those listening who might not know, what does joining the Five Timers Club actually signify in the world of SNL? It's more than just a jacket, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's more than just an honorary title. It signifies this deep integration into the SNL family, its history. It's an affirmation of your comedic power, your enduring appeal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rare achievement, really. A symbol of being one of the show's most beloved and successful alumni. They bring you back because they know you can deliver a truly memorable episode.
And his hosting stints became renowned for these elaborate musical sketches. Almost mini Broadway productions.
Totally. We're talking about numbers like Diner Lobster, Bodega Bathroom, Airport Sushi, New York Musical, Subway Churro, Port Authority Dwayne Reed.
They were incredible.
These intricate productions became a signature of his hosting style, showed his love for musical theater, blended with his unique comedic voice.
And his Five-Timers Club induction in 2022, it was this star-studded affair, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Comedy royalty. Candace Bergen, Tina Fey, Elliot Gould, Paul Rudd, Steve Martin, Conan O'Brien, all welcoming him in an on-air sketch.
It really solidified his place in comedy royalty.
Yeah.
Underscored the respect he commands within the industry.
Definitely. And while he was making waves at SNL, he was also diligently building his stand-up career on the side.
Right. He was a headliner since 2008, performing at major festivals like Bonnaroo, hitting the late-night circuit.
Yeah, crucial proving grounds. Live at Gotham, Conan, Jimmy Kimmel Live, Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, Comedy Central presence. He was truly laying the groundwork for his solo career.
And he started documenting that work. His first comedy album, The Top Part, came out in 2009.
Mm-hmm. Followed by his first stand-up special, New in Town, in 2012, both produced with Comedy Central.
And these early works, they really established his unique voice, didn't they? That blend of observational humor, precise storytelling, and that clean-cut, almost boyish persona that became so recognizable.
Yeah, these specials were crucial in defining the John Mulaney we came to know initially. A voice really distinct in the comedy landscape. He carved out this niche with the sharp suits, the even sharper wit, often recounting relatable, slightly awkward social interactions.
So moving on from SNL, Mulaney, never one to rest on his laurels, he starts exploring new creative avenues. Though, maybe not all of his ventures were immediately successful.
Right. So with SNL behind him, stand-up career taking off, he's at this crossroads, eager to explore new creative avenues. One of his first big swings outside live performance was a sitcom that, well, maybe surprisingly, didn't quite land.
Yeah, tell us about the Mulaney experiment.
So that sitcom was this fascinating attempt to channel his deep affection for classic multi-camera television. He created, produced, and starred in this semi-autobiographical Fox sitcom. It aired 2014-2015.
Okay.
Co-starred some fantastic names, Nassim Pedrad, Martin Short, Elliot Gould. His vision was quite clear, quite nostalgic. He said he wanted to do the type of live audience multi-camera sitcoms that he grew up on, a direct homage to the classics.
Right, trying to capture that old magic. Unfortunately, the critical reception was pretty poor, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was rough. The series got canceled within its first year, by May 2015. Neil Genslinger of the New York Times wrote a particularly brutal line.
Yeah.
He said it rips off Seinfeld so aggressively that in episode 2, it even makes fun of its own plagiarism. But one thing it forgot to borrow from Seinfeld was intelligence.
Ouch. That's harsh. And it highlights a challenging period in his career, right? You know, an experiment that just didn't quite land with critics or audiences.
Yeah.
What do you think went wrong there for someone so gifted at writing?
That's a fair question. You know, sometimes the alchemy of stand-up, it doesn't translate directly to a sitcom format, especially one so heavily influenced by a specific era of TV.
Mm.
While his observations are brilliant, the specific rhythms, the character development needed for a multicam sitcom, they're different from the tightly controlled single perspective narrative of stand-up.
Right.
Maybe the attempt to mimic a classic style too closely, like Genslinger suggested, overshadowed the unique voice Mulaney had cultivated. It was probably a learning experience in the complexities of translating a comedic persona across different mediums.
That makes a lot of sense. But despite that setback, his collaboration with Nick Kroll led to a very different outcome with Oh, Hello.
Yes. Oh, Hello. A cult phenomenon centered around those characters, George St. Giglin and Gil Fizan. Two elderly men from the Upper West Side who host a prank show called Too Much Tuna.
Hilarious character.
Truly a comedic marvel. They embodied this very specific type of New York curmudgeonly humor. They really gained popularity on Kroll's Kroll Show, developed a significant following.
Mm-hmm.
The duo eventually took these characters from TV to the stage, toured the U.S., then brought Oh, Hello to Broadway. It ran from September 2016 to January 2017.
And the Broadway production was even filmed, right?
Yep.
Released on Netflix in June 2017.
Yeah. Featured Steve Martin as a celebrity guest, a bonus clip with Michael J. Fox, even a cameo by Matthew Broderick.
This whole project, it beautifully demonstrated Mulaney's versatility beyond traditional stand-up. Showcased his character work, his writing for sketch, his theatrical chops, in a way that really resonated with audiences.
It showed a willingness to fully commit to an absurd premise and execute it with incredible precision, much like his stand-up, actually.
Good point.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it illustrates how he strategically diversified his creative output, moved into areas that allowed for different kinds of comedic expression, broader audience reach.
Right. And beyond live action, Mulaney also revealed this significant hidden talent for voice acting, a whole other dimension of performance that really expanded his appeal.
He became quite prolific in that space. He voiced Andrew Globerman in the Netflix animated series Big Mouth.
Oh, yeah. Great show.
From 2017 to 2025. Continuing his strong collaboration with Nick Kroll, who co-created the show.
Right. This long-running role further solidified their creative partnership.
Yeah.
Demonstrated Mulaney's ability to inhabit animated characters effectively, lending his distinct vocal patterns and comedic timing to that very relatable, awkward adolescent.
Mm-hmm. He also lent his voice to the beloved Peter Porker, Spider-Ham.
Yes, in Spider.
Into the Spider-Verse in 2018 and its subsequent shorts and sequels. Looks like a future appearance in Spider-Man.
Yep.
Beyond the Spider-Verse in 2027, too.
That character became a massive fan favorite. His performance was a standout in that film, brought such unexpected humor.
Absolutely iconic. And he didn't stop there either. He voiced Chip in Chip and Dale, Rescue Rangers in 2022.
Okay.
And the villainous Big Jack Horner in Puss in Boots, The Last Wish. Also in 2022.
Oh, he was great as Jack Horner. So over the top.
Yeah. These roles really showcase his impressive range and appeal beyond his typical stand-up persona. Allows him to explore different facets of comedy, even play against type.
His work in Puss in Boots as Big Jack Horner was particularly impressive, wasn't it? Demonstrating his range by playing this genuinely menacing and absurd villain. A real departure from his usual clean-cut persona.
Definitely. It showed he could bring his comedic intelligence to a darker, more theatrical role. And another incredibly well-received project that showcased his unique blend of intelligence and humor was Documentary Now.
Ooh,
documentary now, a true masterclass in parody. He served as a writer and co-executive producer for the IFC mockumentary series from 2015 to 2022. It brilliantly satirizes acclaimed documentary films. What makes his contribution to that show so special, do you think?
I think it's his meticulous attention to detail and his deep understanding of the documentary genre itself. He truly contributed to the series' comedic genius, wrote 5 episodes, including The Eye Doesn't Lie, which perfectly parodied Errol Morris's The Thin Blue Line with Bill Hader in 2015.
Incredible episode.
And Soldier of Illusion, Parts 1 and 2, a brilliant parody of Werner Herzog's films in 2022. His writing here is incredibly sharp, capturing not just the superficial stuff, but the underlying narrative structures, the emotional nuances of the original works, and turning them into comedic gold.
And here's a pivotal moment. His first acting role on the show was in the 2019 episode, original cast album, Co-op,
right,
where he played Simon Sawyer, a character based on none other than Stephen Sondheim.
Yes, and he co-wrote the episode and the songs with Seth Meyers.
Wow. This sounds like it perfectly merged so many of his interests. Theater, writing, music, niche humor.
It absolutely did. This episode brilliantly spoofing D.A. Pennebaker's 1970 original cast album, Company documentary. It featured Renee Elise Goldsberry, Richard Kind, Alex Brightman, received widespread critical acclaim. Esquire even called it the best episode of the faux documentary TV series yet. This project just perfectly blended his love for theater, his meticulous writing, his musical talents, and his knack for that niche, intelligent humor. It wasn't just parody. It was this loving, intelligent homage that showcased his unique erudition and comedic voice.
Now, let's talk about what many consider his peak stardom and creative expansion in stand-up. His critically acclaimed special, The Comeback Kid, in 2015, released on Netflix, that truly cemented his status as a major force in comedy, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The Comeback Kid was huge. David Sims of The Atlantic called it a reminder of everything that makes Mulaney so singular. Storytelling rich with well-observed details, delivered with the confidence of someone decades older than 33.
And it got nominated for a Primetime Emmy for Outstanding Writing for a Variety Special in 2016.
Yeah, this special truly showcased his masterful command of storytelling. Moving seamlessly from childhood anecdotes to observations about adulting, all delivered with that characteristic precision. But Kid, gorgeous at Radio City in 2018, filmed during his tour, that was another monumental success that arguably surpassed it.
Really?
Steve Green of IndieWire lauded it as one of the year's best pieces of writing, emphasizing the intricate construction of his jokes and narratives, which often built over the entire special.
And The Atlantic's David Sims again highlighted his enduring appeal, noting, Mulaney is proving he can endure in a field that even the most successful and talented comics could struggle to stay afloat in. Mulaney then won his second Primetime Emmy for Outstanding Writing for a Variety Special for Kid Gorgeous. Truly marking it as a career high, it felt like a real validation of his unique comedic vision.
Yeah, that win was significant recognition from his peers, the industry, not just for his performance, but specifically for his meticulous craftsmanship in writing.
Right.
What's fascinating here, too, is the endorsement he received from comedy legends. In 2017, he was invited to honor David Letterman, who was accepting the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor at the Kennedy Center.
Wow.
And Letterman himself said, John Mulaney, this is the future of comedy, ladies and gentlemen.
That's incredible praise. From Letterman especially, whose own brand of humor was so distinct, often anti-establishment, to crown Mulaney the future really speaks volumes.
Yeah.
What do you think Mulaney embodies that bridge those comedic generations so effectively?
That's an excellent point. Letterman always championed authenticity, right? A unique point of view. I think Mulaney, despite his clean-cut appearance, brought a similar level of intellectual rigor and often a subtle subversion to his observations. He wasn't overtly rebellious, but he was incredibly smart about the absurdities he pointed out. Put him in a lineage of thoughtful, intelligent comedians.
Yeah, that makes sense. He was also invited to perform stand-up at Jon Stewart's charity event, Night of Too Many Stars, in 2017, and Seth Rogen's Hilarity for Charity in 2018, further solidifying his place among comedy's elite for good causes.
These invitations reflect not just his talent, but also his respected standing within the comedy community, a sign he was seen as a go-to for significant events, both for his comedic prowess and his reliability. Then came John Mulaney and the Sack Lunch Bunch in 2019.
Oh, I love this.
This Netflix children's musical comedy special was truly unique and I think really unexpected for many people. It was inspired by classic shows like Sesame Street, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, The Electric Company.
It was such a delightful surprise, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Showcasing a completely different side of his creative genius. It featured Mulaney with 15 child actors and singers, aged 8 to 13.
Right.
And had incredible celebrity cameos from Andre de Shields, David Byrne, Richard Kine, Natasha Lyonne, Ellie Ashford, and Jake Gyllenhaal as Mr. Music.
Jake Gyllenhaal as Mr. Music was just perfect casting somehow.
It was a fantastic blend of innocence and sophisticated meta-humor.
And critically, it was universally praised for its cleverness and charm. Alan Sepinwall of Rolling Stone compared it favorably to things like Galaxy Quest, The Princess Bride, Jane the Virgin. Well, as one of those gems that manages to simultaneously parody a genre and be an excellent recreation of it. This project truly showcased a unique, unexpected side of his creativity, showed his ability to excel in diverse, complex formats, honoring the past while creating something utterly fresh.
And it garnered nominations for 2 Emmy Awards, Outstanding Variety Special, pre-recorded, and Outstanding Writing for a Variety Special.
Mm-hmm.
He continued his collaborations too, co-hosting the Independent Spirit Awards ceremonies with Nick Kroll in 2017 and 2018, further cementing their comedic partnership.
Yeah, this demonstrates their strong, ongoing partnership across different platforms, shows their chemistry translates seamlessly to hosting duties. In November 2020, he even joined Late Night with Seth Meyers as a staff writer.
Oh, I remember that. That was interesting.
Yeah, a return to the writing room that many found interesting, especially given his history with Meyers at SNL and his established stand-up fame. It showed his continued dedication to the craft of writing itself.
He also appeared in that Netflix and YouTube collaboration series hosted by Tan France Dressing Funny in June 2019, showcasing his willingness to engage in more casual, experimental content.
Right, and he toured with Pete Davidson for Sundays with Pete and John in 2019, highlighting another significant comedic pairing that many fans enjoyed, bringing together 2 pretty distinct voices from SNL.
Yeah, that was a hot ticket.
And a poignant role, actually, in the hall, honoring the greats of stand-up in 2022, where he honored Robin Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Alongside Jon Stewart, Dave Chappelle, Pete Davidson, Chelsea Handler, it felt like a moment of reflection, respect for comedic heritage, recognizing the giants on whose shoulders he stood.
Okay, let's shift gears now to a section of his life that became very public, deeply personal, and profoundly shaped his art and public persona. His marriages and relationships marked significant shifts in his personal narrative.
Mm-hmm.
He married multimedia artist Anna Marie Tendler on July 5, 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Friend Dan Levy performed the ceremony.
Right. Their separation was then announced in May 2021, and they finalized their divorce in January 2022. This period of personal upheaval coincided with other significant life changes.
Yeah, in September 2021, Mulaney announced that he and actress Olivia Munn were expecting a child.
Their son was born on November 24th, 2021. Mulaney and Munn then married in July 2024 in New York.
Okay.
And their second child, a daughter, was born via surrogate on September 14th, 2024. So these events mark these profound shifts in his personal life. Fatherhood, a new marriage, all while navigating really intense public scrutiny.
Absolutely. And what's truly fascinating here and profoundly impactful on his recent work are his struggles with substance use and his very public journey to recovery.
Mm-hmm. Mulaney has openly discussed this. In a 2014 interview, he had stated he'd been sober since September 22, 2005.
Right. A long time.
Nearly a decade and a half. This long period of sobriety made his later struggles particularly surprising to many, I think, because he had become almost the symbol of a clean-cut, sharp comedian. Someone who always seemed totally in control.
Here's where his narratives took that incredibly raw turn, disrupting that image entirely.
Mm.
In September 2020, he checked into a rehabilitation facility. He left, hosted SNL in October.
Right.
And then tragically relapsed after the show. Mm. This was a critical turning point, wasn't it? A moment of profound vulnerability that, for many, maybe shattered the carefully constructed persona he had built.
A truly pivotal and, I imagine, a heartbreaking moment in his life and career. In December 2020, a group of his closest friends, Seth Meyers, Fred Armisen, Bill Hader, Nick Kroll, Natasha Lyonne, others, staged an intervention for Mulaney.
Wow. That's quite a list of friends.
It is. He then checked into a drug rehabilitation center for alcoholism, cocaine dependence, and prescription drug addiction. This collective effort from his close friends, it really highlights the depth of his struggles and the immense community concern for his well-being, shows how deeply he was valued by his peers.
He then moved into outpatient care in February 2021, slowly taking steps toward recovery. His courageous return to stand-up comedy came in May 2021, with new material titled John Mulaney from Scratch, performing sold-out shows, a large tour that ran from March to June 2022. This tour was a brave, very public step back into the spotlight, directly addressing his very recent experiences, using his art as a means of processing and sharing his journey.
Yeah, turning it into material. This period also brought some public scrutiny, challenging Rahere's fully maintained image. During his From Scratch tour in May 2022, Mulaney invited Dave Chappelle to open his show.
Right, I remember this.
Which drew criticism due to transphobic jokes Chappelle had made previously. This incident highlights the complexities, the public scrutiny that can come with evolving comedic voices, personal choices, especially in a rapidly changing social landscape.
Yeah.
It's an example of how comedians' decisions offstage or in their choice of collaborators can intersect with public perception, ethical considerations, even when not directly related to their own material.
And all of this whole period, it led to his 2023 Netflix special, Baby J, filmed in Boston. This special dealt primarily with his visit to drug rehabilitation, his efforts toward sobriety. It was a stark, courageous, deeply personal departure from his previous work. Before we dive into its critical reception, what does it mean for a comedian, especially one as meticulous and image-conscious as Mulaney had been, to lay bare such raw, painful experiences on stage?
That's the pivotal question, isn't it? And it really defines this period of his career. For years, Mulaney was the clean-cut comedian in the suit, almost a comedic safe space known for his observational hair that kept a certain distance. Baby J shattered that. It wasn't just about detailing his relapse. It was about grappling with the public's perception of him, the maybe perceived betrayal of an image he'd meticulously built, and the profound vulnerability of admitting that pristine facade was crumbling.
Right.
It forces both him and the audience to confront that chasm between the persona and the man. And in doing so, paradoxically, he deepened his connection with many, I think, because he revealed a fundamental human truth about struggle. It's almost an act of comedic deconstruction where he's tearing down his own mythology.
That makes sense. It's almost like a recalibration of the contract he had with his audience. Moving from observer to, well, participant in his own life's chaos, how did critics, and maybe more importantly, audiences, respond to this radical shift?
The response was complex, but largely positive, I'd say, for its honesty. While it was widely praised for its frankness, its courage, Variety notably pointed out that it never tamed with a comprehensive account of when Mulaney relapsed, or why, or how his fame and fortune affected his addiction, or what it felt like to watch everything play out in the press. Ah, okay. So not a full tell-all.
Right. Which raises an important question about how much a public figure owes their audience in terms of detailed personal disclosure. That delicate balance between catharsis and complete revelation. It wasn't a tell-all in the traditional sense, but rather a carefully crafted comedic narrative about the experience.
That distinction is important. Despite that nuance, multiple reviews, including Esquire, compared its honesty about addiction to Richard Pryor's 1982 special Live on the Sunset Strip.
Wow.
That's a huge comparison, right? Mm. Elevating Baby J to a significant moment in confessional comedy, placing him in a lineage of groundbreaking vulnerability.
It undeniably places Baby J in that lineage of groundbreaking vulnerable specials, acknowledges its place in comedy history. Mulaney concluded the special by reading and commenting on sections of a wide-ranging interview he gave with GQ while under the influence of cocaine.
I remember that part. Stating he didn't remember his answers. The interviewer, Fraser Tharp, even wrote a follow-up piece released the same day as the special, adding another layer to the story. A meta-commentary on the entire public narrative, intertwining journalism and performance in this very modern way.
Right. It was Mulaney, once again, using his meticulous eye to dissect his own public image and the media's role in it.
Exactly.
So what has he been up to beyond the stage and his most recent special? He's continued his acting work. Appeared as himself in the episode Board 9 of the Pete Davidson series, Boop Keys, in 2023, showcasing a willingness to lean into his own celebrity for comedic effect.
Right. And he had that notable guest role as Stevie, partner to Michelle Brizzotto, in 3 episodes of The Bear.
Oh, yeah. He was great in The Bear. Unexpectedly sweet.
From 2023 to 2025, he also guest starred as Daniel Clyde Otis in the Peacock crime series Poker Face in 2025. These roles show a continued engagement with scripted drama and comedy, often in supporting but impactful capacities, demonstrating his versatility as a performer beyond just stand-up.
He also hosted John Mulaney Presents, Everybody's in L.A. in 2024. That 6-part live-streamed Netflix talk show, during the Netflix Is a Joke Festival.
Mm-hmm. It was well received as a pop-up talk show and a throwback vehicle for exploring highly personal hobby horses.
That sounds like another interesting evolution of his hosting and interview skills.
Mm.
A bit looser, maybe.
Yeah, this venture allowed him to flex his hosting and interviewing muscles in a new, less structured format. It resonated with audiences who appreciated his unique blend of intelligence and quirky humor. He followed up with a spin-off, Everybody's Live with John Mulaney, in 2025. Suggests the success and potential for expansion of that experimental format, blending his love for talk shows with the modern live-streamed approach.
And he remains deeply connected to SNL, which is truly a testament to his enduring legacy there. He served as a writer and co-host for the Saturday Night Live 50th anniversary special in 2025, alongside Steve Martin, performing in sketches.
Mm-hmm. He also presented for Conan O'Brien the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor in 2025, honoring his early mentor, kind of bringing his career full circle there.
That's lovely.
These continued high-profile appearances, they underscore his enduring relevance, his respected place in the industry, shows he's not just a passing trend, but really a comedic institution. He also announced his Mr. Whatever tour for 2025, with dates across the U.S. and Canada.
Right.
What's particularly compelling about this tour is that he's occasionally joined by guests like Nick Kroll, Fred Armisen, Mike Birbiglia, Pete Davidson, Jon Stewart, Martin Short.
Wow, that's a lineup.
It reflects his continued collaborative spirit, that strong community within comedy. It's a testament to the respect and camaraderie he shares with his peers.
And he even returned to Broadway acting in Simon Rich's all-in comedy about love in 2024 at the Hudson Theater, acting opposite Fred Armisen, Richard Kind, Renee Elise Goldsberry, Chloe Fineman.
Right. This really highlights his continued engagement with live theater, another facet of his diverse career, proves his commitment to the stage in all its forms.
Beyond his professional life, his personal views have also evolved and become public, offering another layer of insight into the man behind the jokes. In 2014, he indicated his religious views aligned more with Judaism than his Catholic upbringing.
Mm-hmm. By 2020, he described himself as an atheist. This evolution in his spiritual perspective is noteworthy, reflects a personal journey of belief and self-discovery that many people can probably relate to.
He's also engaged in public events beyond comedy stages, showing a broader civic awareness. He appeared at a USO Celebration of Service event in 2016, performing for military families alongside Jon Stewart, David Letterman, attended by President Obama and Vice President Biden.
Right. And his political humor has even led to consequences,
mm-hmm.
illustrating that tightrope comedians walk in public discourse. A joke made while hosting SNL on February 29th, 2020.
Oh, the leap day joke.
Exactly. About Julius Caesar being stabbed for being a maniac, with a reference to Donald Trump. It led to an investigation by the United States Secret Service. Yeah. The file was closed without action, but this incident clearly underscores the boundaries, the sensitivities comedians face, especially when commenting on political figures, even indirectly.
It definitely highlights the intense scrutiny public figures, particularly comedians, are under in the current climate.
Yeah.
In terms of political affiliations, he donated to Bernie Sanders' 2016 presidential campaign.
Correct.
And was seen at a Black Lives Matter protest in Washington, D.C. in June 2020. These actions, for a comedian often seen as somewhat apolitical in his stand-up, they hint at a deeper personal engagement with social issues.
He also appeared alongside Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez as openers for a concert featuring The Strokes. Mm-hmm. That was a fundraiser for NYC mayoral candidate Maya Wiley in June 2021.
Right.
And he powerfully supported the Writers Guild of America's strike in 2023 by canceling a Baby J FYC screening and panel, showed solidarity with his fellow writers during a critical time for the industry. These actions show his willingness to engage with contemporary political and social issues, aligning his public persona with his values, even if his comedy itself isn't always explicitly political.
What a journey. Mm. We've truly journeyed through the remarkable life of John Mulaney, haven't we? From those precocious childhood aspirations in Chicago, nurtured by that intellectually rigorous background, his unique comedic influences, to his groundbreaking work on SNL, his diverse ventures in film and television, and his courageous public sharing of personal struggles and triumphs. His story is really a testament to the power of meticulous observation, profound collaboration, and an astonishing vulnerability in creating truly impactful art.
So what stands out to you from Mulaney's journey, especially after peeling back all these layers? Is it his ability to craft compelling narratives from everyday life with such precision, or his unwavering dedication to the craft of comedy, constantly seeking new outlets for his voice? Or maybe it's his brave decision to lay bare his personal battles for his audience, transforming that pain into this new, resonant form of authenticity. There's a powerful lesson here, I think, about how genuine authenticity, even when difficult and painful, can deeply resonate and connect with people on a profound level.
It truly is, isn't it? That shift from the meticulously curated persona to raw, honest self-revelation is such a defining characteristic of his recent work. And as Mulaney continues to evolve, you know, using his experiences to shape new material, exploring different creator outlets, what does his ongoing career tell us about the future of celebrity, personal storytelling, and the ever-shifting expectations placed on public figures in this digital age?
Yeah, that's a great question.
What role do you think vulnerability plays in a comedian's ability to connect with an audience today? And how might that influence the next generation of comedic voices, especially as those lines between public and private just keep blurring even further?
Those are profound questions that Mulaney's trajectory really brings to the forefront, don't they? His journey challenges us to consider the evolving contract between public figures and their audiences, especially in an era where personal narratives are increasingly entwined with artistic expression. It highlights that vulnerability, once maybe seen as a risk, can now be a powerful catalyst for deeper connection, potentially setting a new standard for authenticity in an often performative world.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We hope it gave you some compelling new insights and perspectives on one of comedy's most fascinating voices. We'll see you next time.